TWO Radio at Radio Stormer on the Daily Stormer.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is the 26th of June. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I will shortly be bringing on my co-host, Dennis Wise, producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. But before that, I will just remind people that we do have a chat room, we do have a live stream, you can subscribe to our podcasts, you can follow the feed. You'll find all those links in the sidebar of the Daily Stormer site. There's a big eagle there, you can click on that and that will take you to the chat room, and it's just underneath Andre's Twitter feed, so it's quite easy to find. Once you're there, just click on one of those links and you'll find all the Radio Stormer content. And now that's out of the way, I will introduce my co-host, Mr. Dennis Wise. How are you doing today, Dennis?
Again, I'm doing fine, thank you, Sven. Hope all's well at your end.
Yeah, things are okay. It's good weather. They keep saying the weather's terrible on the television, but I think it's been quite good this year, to be honest. It's been very pleasant. It's not been too hot.
Ah, but you're in Wales, and where I am, it's always cloudy and miserable.
It's grim up north.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we've had some people have been talking in the chat room. They were talking about this Anthony Sutton, who made this Wall Street funded Adolf Hitler, which I thought we could make a topic to start the discussion off with today. I mean, I haven't actually read his book, but it's something that you do often hear of, that Wall Street funded Hitler and he was somehow in the pockets of the bankers. I mean, which is just ludicrous, really, when you look at what they did and what National Socialism was all about. But I know that you've actually had a look into this, and you've had a look at what Anthony Sutton actually had to say. So I thought maybe we could start off with you explaining something to the listeners about this, Dennis.
Well, I think because of the internet truth and knowledge, what's been leaking, you know, putting Hitler. One of the major things which brought people round about Hitler was the fact that the situation today, a lot of people realise, is the cause of the bankers. And what is happening in America happened just the same in Weimar Germany. So, you know, unless there's another Hitler comes along, or a Hitler-type figure in America, you know, the country's going to be on the brink of bankruptcy and drop off the map. So, in a way, what they've done is to kind of lead people down another path. You know, they couldn't actually say that he wasn't involved with bankers, and so they kind of twisted the truth, if you like. There's certain things went on which had nothing to do with the Nazis being funded, but a slight twist here and there, and people are quite capable of falling for it, because a lot of people don't know a lot about National Socialism during the great years, but even less in the years when they were unknown. So this mystery of how Germany could turn things around within 3 years, there must be some kind of a reason, and this fits perfectly into a lot of people's thinking that, oh, they must have been funded because it wasn't possible. And another angle that is often used is the fact that the Rothschilds always finance both sides. You know, some people can't really understand, they can't get it through their heads that every now and again, you know, shit happens, you know, and somebody comes through and says enough's enough, and the consequences are a war without the Rothschilds, you know, say in it. So, these are because it's the internet again, is the catalyst to all. They have to have certain answers. And, of course, anybody trying to revise or research Hitler, as soon as they hit that he was a Rothschild's agent, deflect them then from researching anymore. It's genius how they've done it, because it just puts up a wall. Back that up with the likes of Alex Jones and this Sutton guy. and you've got something, you know, where people then refuse to go any further and then travel down the road that the Rothschilds and everybody else wants them to go.
Yeah, it's like people think that it's a conspiracy because there are so many other conspiracies, and because the Rothschilds right. have been involved in starting up these revolutions, they don't realise that that was a genuine revolution, the National yeah. Socialist one.
Exactly. The French Revolution was a perfect example, which is when the Rothschilds made a lot of the money by backing both horses and getting. The messenger got back to London sooner than anybody else, and the Rothschilds started dumping the stock. People thought Napoleon had won. And then once the signal was given, the people involved with the Rothschilds bought up all this stock, which everybody else started dumping, for a rock-bottom price. So it's quite true that, you know, they have done this in the past, and it's paid off for them. But in this instance, it was a natural revolution from within, with good reasons for it.
Well, one of the ways I think you can tell that a revolution is genuine is that there will be very little blood lost. I mean, a revolution which was funded by these bankers, you could say, well, that would be the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, these colour revolutions that they're trying to set off in Syria and the Ukraine. And the genuine yeah. revolutions, you could say, would be National Socialism, where there was very little bloodshed. You could say that the Gaddafi's revolution, there wasn't a single life lost in Gaddafi's revolution. Mm. And that was yeah. a genuine one. You know, these genuine ones, where it actually comes from the people, they're not going to start killing one another, are they?
No, because obviously the majority, a vast majority, want that change.
Yeah, the people were all behind Hitler because of, you know, the common sense of what he was actually doing. I mean, it was a big part of the... Of the National Socialist philosophy, and part of the 25 points was abolishing usury and getting rid of usury, which is what the whole banking system is based upon.
When you add that to the threat of communism, because remember when Hitler first came back after World War One, communists themselves tried a revolution and were put down. Add all that together, and it's quite obvious, really. But like I say, people don't realise the previous history of it all. It's easy to accept. You know, they can't understand why today we all live, you know, on the edge of, you know, most people haven't even got savings these days and living from day to day. Whereas all of a sudden in 3 years, Germany's the leading power in Europe, and they can't fathom how this can happen without some kind of assistance from these bankers, when in actual fact, what it tells me is how much do these bankers actually make? Because once you take that power away from them and you can turn a country in 3 years into the driving force and powerhouse of Europe, you know, it's mind-boggling. Plus, they've got the means of printing infinite money. So, you know, they're never going to be short of anything. They can buy all these people up. They can do whatever they want when they're so rich. But the ordinary, everyday person, especially new to all this, they just simply can't fathom it. And so a simple excuse is, oh, the bankers funded him, and then a couple of books come out and verify this, is enough for people to spread it over the internet and take it as gospel.
Well, one of the things that the National Socialists did, and that Hitler did, is they drew a distinction between industrial capital and financial capital. And what they meant by this was wealth that was amassed through industry and through actually having product there, and wealth that just came from interest on the top of loans. So you had people that had lots of money, but they just got it from putting interest on their loans, whereas you had other people that had money that was invested in all their industry and in their factories and in their innovation that they had. and the wealth of a country, you know, it's really got to be based upon the industry and what the country can actually produce, rather than how many noughts it has on the piece of paper where you keep up the tally, you know, on the what goes in and what goes out. Because I mean, this is what we see in Zimbabwe at the moment. I mean, they've got millions of noughts, but they're not producing anything at all. Because this is what the wealth is actually based upon, is real physical wealth, not this abstract idea of cash. Because the cash itself, the money itself, is just a measure of the value of the products. And what these Jews have done is they've managed to turn the measure of the value into the value itself. And this is what Hitler realized with Gottfried Feder, that it was usury that was making these bankers all this money, and they weren't actually lifting a finger to do any work. So they still needed to get investment in order for them to start up new industry. So what they did, they got investment from these big industrialists that actually had made their wealth from industry in the first place. So they did have something to do with these industrialists and this IG Farben and these chemical companies, and they did take money from them, because the money that they had earned had been through hard work. It wasn't through putting interest on the top of things. And this is where these communists say, well, Hitler was in the pockets of these bankers and these capitalists. They get the bankers mixed up with these industrialists that had earned their money through hard work, through industry, not through putting interest on bank loans.
Well, another telltale sign is the fact that as soon as Hitler came to power, the international jury declared war on him. So, you know, he was certainly no friend of the international Jews. So in 1933, they started the embargo. But again, because of this embargo as well, you know, and still being able to turn it around, leads me to believe that, you know, the money that they were making or hoarding for themselves was phenomenal. And yet the ordinary man who, you know, just gets a regular wage just can't grasp, you know, a banker's, I mean, I watched a program the other day on the Mafia, and one guy at his peak was making 10 million a week. It was second only to Al Capone on the money he was making. This is another world, you know. This is equivalent to what the bankers themselves are gangsters. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that those kind of figures were being made by people at that time, you know, in Germany and around the world, and even today, even in Britain. And that after all that, we have to bail them out when they mess up.
Tune in to Radio Stormer on the dailystormer.com.
Big financial backers, these industrial backers, they didn't want the same thing to happen in Germany that was happening in Russia. They didn't want their factories to get destroyed, and they didn't want to be attacked by the workers. So, you know, it was in their interests as well to see that the National Socialism succeeded and kept communism away. And even if these guys weren't such good people, and they were, you know, very capitalistic, you know, they still wanted to see National Socialism rise, because it was better than communism. You know, even if they were against National Socialism in some of the aspects of it, at least it was against communism. So, well, you know, they wanted to invest for that reason, I would have thought.
Well, not only that, you know, the fact that there was such a strong leader or a strong personality. I mean, when he won the election, there were streets ahead of any other competitors in the way they campaigned and everything. Everything was fresh and mobile. He used the aeroplanes, for instance. So he was the dominating force in politics. So, you know, once he got in and his traits were proven, obviously they looked to him as the one to stop any chance of communism and the rest of taking place. So, yeah, I mean, even, you know, they may have not even agreed with his principles, but were certainly willing to pay to save. It's like Napoleon said. I always love that saying of Napoleon's: people only move by fear and self-interest.
Yeah, well, that's very true. That's very true. Mm. He was trying to include the National Socialism was about having the self, including the rest of the nation. So you saw the rest of the nation as an extension of yourself, like your kinsmen. So putting mm-hmm. the nation's needs above the needs of the individual.
Yeah, just like Cameron does. Yeah, sorry, I couldn't resist that one.
Well, you see, this is another problem that I think that people have. They see the falsehoods that are told by our politicians today, and they think that everybody must have been like that in the past, and Hitler sure. must have been like that as well, and he must have been lying when he was saying correct. These things to his people.
Correct.
But we see by his actions and by
his words.
Yeah, by his, you know, the fruits of his words were his actions. You know, he did what he said he was going to do, and he succeeded with what he did.
Yeah, probably the most honest politician that there's ever been.
Really, because, he was the last great European statesman, wasn't he?
Without a doubt, if not the greatest.
I mean, when you look at what they did, with the way that they changed the banking system, it's the way that a banking system should work. And what they did, they produced the amount of money that was required to purchase the materials for the new building projects and what have you, which employed the people and gave them the money to then spend on buying up the building projects, like paying for the houses, paying for these cars. And once the money had come back in again, it was zeroed. They were looking at money as a measure of value rather than as being a value in itself. Rather than trying to make as much money as possible, they were trying to make life as best as possible for the people.
I mean, you're right there. I mean, people forget, right, at that time in the civilised world, you had, Germany, once Hitler came to power and made all these changes and invested all this into the country and the infrastructure, compared to the Soviet Union, it was non-existent. I mean, people didn't usually have a car, never mind a road. But people from Great Britain used to go over to Germany and admire what Hitler had done, because he dragged it into the time where it's almost bankrupt and no investment whatsoever to this powerhouse with motorways and economy booming, even though under a trade embargo. He was being admired by the people in the West, which were known to be the leaders of civilization up to that point. So, when people's living in them conditions, suddenly from not being able to have food on the table to suddenly having food on the table and more, these holidays that they were given to go on, it was a utopia. I mean, he tried at one point, before the war, to get everybody to own a car. As I said, just like Cameron.
Oh, and another one of the things that happened, or that comes from this, is where they were spending the money in Germany. I mean, it had value because you could buy these German products with it, with their currency. But then where it comes unstuck is with is when you need to be trading with other countries. So what they did, they bartered, which cut out the middleman entirely. They used the whatever for the value. They would still use the dollar or the Reichsmark as a unit of value, or the pound, to measure up the value of what they were trying to trade, and then they would swap it, they would barter it for that amount with the country that they were dealing with, which cut out the middleman, which really annoyed these bankers. And the other thing was the gold standard, because the rest of the world was still linked up to this gold standard, and where a certain amount of money would get you a certain amount of gold. Now, through fractional reserve banking, there wasn't enough gold in the world to actually pay for everything that had been lent out. But they still kept up this fictional idea that you could always cash your money in to get this gold. And the National Socialists had clicked onto that you didn't need to have this gold in stock in order to create money to use it for growth, for there to be economic growth in the country. So because of this not using the gold standard as well, this really infuriated the bankers, and they really did not want this to catch on. They didn't want this to catch on with other people. And you can see all this when you look into it. So I don't know how Anthony Sutton can say Wall Street funded him, because what he did was the complete opposite. He showed that that we didn't need to have a gold standard. We didn't need to have fractional reserve banking. We could just create the money that was required for the projects that it was needed for. And you didn't need to put interest on it.
Yeah. I think he has an agenda anyway, to be honest. I mean, he wrote a trilogy of books. I think Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, which I think he actually tries to deny the fact that they were funded by Wall Street. Obviously, the one with Wall Street and Hitler, and there was another one, I can't remember the name. But there's also another book which has been totally debunked by Sidney Warburg, who was... Nobody ever really found out who he was or what his background was, but totally debunked the book that he brought out. But according to Anthony Sutton, because one of the Warburgs was was a director in one of the companies what was dealing with Germany at the time, which was not really anything of worthwhile, because that's what companies do. I mean, they're out to make a profit. Well, because he was a director, he was then accused that this company was actually funding them, but wasn't actually funding them. It was actually trying to do a deal. I mean, Germany had to do the same thing. I mean, they couldn't cut all ties off with everybody, otherwise the country would go back bankrupt again. So it's just a natural development. And there were some deals would have been done prior to the Hitler coming to power as well. So. But it's been twisted to an extent where people, as I said, believe that Wall Street actually backed them. When in actual fact, the only sides that Wall Street did back was the Freemasons of the West and the Communists in the East against National Socialism. Those were the only two sides they backed and wanted to destroy Germany.
Also, if you've got a country that's producing products that the rest of the world needs and is coming out with innovation and innovative new things, and their economy is expanding and they require investment, then you're going to be wanting to invest money in that. You are going to be wanting to invest in that. And they weren't getting investment from the banks. They were getting investment from these industrial companies.
People forget, up to that point, Germany wasn't actually in a physical war with anybody. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? I mean, the Jews might have said, right, don't deal with the Nazis, but not everybody took them at the word. And so life went on as any country would do, dealing, with business deals. But people tend to think, because they've seen the outcome of the war and they've been... propagandized about Hitler being a monster and all this kind of thing. They take it from 1933, this monster was being funded, etc. And any deals he did was, must have been shady. But at the time, Hitler was acknowledged throughout Europe as being this great leader who turned Germany around, even by, ex-prime ministers of England and royalty even. So they've got to forget about the actual war and take it from how things were from 1933, before the actual war started. I'm talking the physical war of World War II,
Well, anyone that actually cared about their people was impressed with what Germany had done and what Hitler had done. As you say, prime ministers and royalty were impressed with what he had done because they cared about their own people and could see that Hitler cared about his people and was doing the best that he possibly could for them. I think there's even a quote from Churchill that actually talks about this gold standard, and it's because he left the gold standard that this war was being prosecuted.
Exactly.
And when you say And this is another thing that gets said about it. They say another thing that you hear is people will say, "Well, they were only wealthy because they were investing all their money in producing stuff for war and preparing for war." And it was the war economy which lifted Germany out of the recession. Now it's the complete opposite of the truth. It was America that was lifted out of the recession by producing weapons for war. Not Germany. Germany wasn't prepared with weapons for war, was she?
No, but Germany did rearm, because which country could survive on 100,000 army and no navy, as the Versailles Treaty stated? So, but at the same time, Hitler did offer that if anybody or any other country would agree to a total disarmament, treaty, then he would certainly apply with it. But none of the other countries will do, so what's he left with? He's got to build his army up, not so much for war, but because of the ridiculous figures of a 100,000 army.
Well, at the start of the war, the infantry was still on horseback. They didn't have tanks. They were still, at the state that they were at the beginning of the First World War. They hadn't advanced. I mean, if they had been putting all their money into weapons, they wouldn't have been able to build all the roads and the houses that they did.
Yeah, which worked against them. By the time, the invasion forces arrived at Germany, they had the perfect runway straight through to, the cities of Germany, whereas if they had a motorway running at all in Russia, I'm quite sure they'd have got there before 6 months. And it would have changed the war, but because Russia had no, or Soviet Union had no infrastructure, because Stalin loved his people so much. Sorry about that, I couldn't resist that one. that it worked in their favour. That's fate, I suppose. It's how it works out sometimes, but it certainly worked against Germany when the invasion forces arrived.
Well, the roads that he made, I mean, they were so good and so solid, the concrete of these roads that they made, that you could run tanks on them. But the roads are still there. They built everything to last. They didn't want it to break down so that it would have to be replaced to keep the economy going. They built things so that they would last. I mean, Germany still has this reputation today for making really good quality.
The cars stuff, are exceptional.
Yeah, BMWs. I think they started off as a saucepan making plant.
Volkswagen. Yeah.
Well, the Volkswagen. I think the final design for that, the actual shape of the car, was designed by Hitler himself.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, you can't say that England didn't have the technology, because obviously they had the Rolls Royce. But that never filtered down to the common man. The common man just got, the least of everything in a Mini, for instance. Do you understand what I'm saying? Whereas, it filtered down from the Mercedes and into the, where the population would have a strong and reliable motor. Whereas over here, yourself.
Yeah, well, if you look at the Volkswagen, they're pricey cars. They're well made. They last for a long time. And you think, well, this was the car that was produced for everyone. This was the car that was produced so that every working man could have a car.
Not exactly. Like, yeah, which it was a gem. Yeah,
like cars just for the rich people. It was for everybody. And this is one of the reasons why it dissuaded people from coming over to Germany, and they wouldn't allow the ocean liners to dock in Britain, because they didn't want the British people to see the way that the German workers were being treated. Looking after your workers. I mean, the British Empire way was just to get as much as you possibly could out of them, and it was up to them to then try and get as much as they possibly could out of somebody else.
Which is why we see the crowds flocking wherever he appears. Because if Cameron would do the same thing, I'm sure crowds would flock to wherever he appeared.
Well, yeah, you can see that it's genuine. You can see that that's genuine.
Exactly, yeah. I was listening to some of his speeches the other day as well, and the passion and the fire and the determination. And just, to actually believe for a second that he was duping the German people is ridiculous.
Well, one of the things that you can notice is when you see the security there. You know, I mean, if you look at the security nowadays, they'll be in front. They'll be in front of the personality, and then they'll be looking at the audience, trying to pick out people that are trying to cause harm. But if you look at Germany, they're facing the other way. They're not looking at the German people because they know nobody's going to be wanting to cause him any harm. They're looking at Hitler, and they're looking at Hitler himself, and he's driving along with his open top car.
He stood up, prime target.
And the people rushing to him, and
I managed to dig up some footage for the documentary, the Adolf Hitler Greatest Story, and I managed to find some footage, and it was in terrible, it was green and blue and horrible, and I managed to clean it up best I could, and I put it into the documentary because it just showed a complete wave of people heading towards his car. It was like a wave from the ocean, and women, small kids and blokes, all together in this mass of a wave. And I thought, I just can't leave this out of the documentary. And so I managed to clean it up, put it in black and white, cleaned it up as best I could, and it comes over, best I could make it. So yeah, sorry about interrupting them, but I had to mention this. Like, it was footage I'd never seen before. I'd seen obvious footage of the crowd waving at the side of the street, but I'd never seen this wave before.
I remember the bit that you're talking about. I mean, you can't fake that. And this is what some of the people say. They say, oh, well, it was set up, because if you look at Cameron today, they have people going there to greet him or whatever, but only about 20 or 30 people.
Well, I suppose you should say that, because I don't know whether you've seen it on the internet or not. Have you seen it when the world leaders, apart from Obama, was there after the Paris shootings, and the way the TV was working, like, it looked like they were in front of this massive crowd, when all the time, if you go on the internet, there's photos, it shows them with maybe 30 or 40 behind them, and they're being filmed in such an angle, and then it's mixed in with the big crowds of Paris. There's no way they ever walked in front of that big audience through Paris. No way. It was just a one big con.
Well, people look at things like that today, and they look at the trickery that's used today. Even like in Iraq, when they pulled down the statue of Saddam Hussein and tried to make it look like it was, it was a genuine thing of the people. You know, they weren't doing this back then. You can see that this was genuine. You couldn't get that amount of people, sort of rushing forward like that to greet him. And when you look at the film of the Anschluss, I mean, that's incredible. It's so moving. You got people, climbed up buildings, and on the outside climbed up statues so that they can see. And you can just feel the emotion and the warmth towards, their leader. It's like the German messiah that had, saved the nation.
This ordinary person from Austria who left to go fight for Germany in World War I comes back, in a position he was. That in itself is the makings of a movie anyway. Because remember, and you'll still see these comments on YouTube, etc., if Hitler had died before 1939, he would have been the greatest leader Europe ever known. It's only that period after World War II when he's demonised, and they've used the Holocaust and other means of demonising him, that people who believe that, but they still believe that he was a great leader up to that point. The point being, he was a great leader all the way through, but was outnumbered, defeated, and then demonised. So, you can't, as you say, you can't fake it.
You can't put, the way that we behave today, and you can't really sort of look back and say, oh, well, they would have been doing the same thing then. I mean, they weren't really faking stuff on a large scale until they came out with the Holocaust stuff and the gas chambers stuff and the films that they were producing there. And that was made with Jewish producers that they brought over from America.
Well, it was started by the Jewish communists in the East and then latched onto by the Jewish, as you said, Freemasons and Hollywood producers in the West. And they thought, oh, this is a great idea. We've tried demonising the Germans before in previous wars. This is a great chance now, because we'll wipe everybody out anyway, and there's no defence to anything what's said, which is exactly what they did.
Well, the film industry is another point. I mean, if you look at the films that the German film industry produced, they were films that were against the bankers, that were exposing the Freemasons and the Freemasonic role in starting wars and revolutions. And they exposed the Rothschilds, the banking system, and how the banking system started. And the bit that you referred to at the beginning of this podcast to do with Waterloo and how the Rothschilds bought up all the shares in everything in Britain because of faking the result of Waterloo on the stock exchange. And the Germans made a film of this. So why would the bankers be investing in somebody who is exposing all their crimes? Another thing, I mean, you brought this up in a previous podcast about how they actually imprisoned someone from the Rothschilds and took over their properties. I mean, I've read that they turned one of the Rothschilds' properties into a welfare centre in France.
Well, I don't doubt it.
A welfare centre.
I don't doubt. I mean, the Rothschilds actually own the Versailles Palace. You know, that was just one of the buildings that they owned around Europe. They owned fabulous palaces all around the world. They did it Austria at that time and obviously lost all these possessions once Hitler was taking Europe over. And so, I mean, one member of the family died in a camp. As I said before, one was ransomed off for a world record fee, which has never been broken to this day. So, but people still refuse sometimes, you know, to believe, even though they see the obvious. And that all stems from this propaganda of being taught from a young age that Hitler was a monster. So it takes a lot to turn a lot of people around, and some don't even turn. But logically looking at things, or rationally looking at things, you know, it's quite obvious that Hitler had a feud with the Rothschilds, and everything that he said, you would expect him to have a feud with the Rothschilds.
Yeah, I mean, this film, I mean, it names them, Rothschilds. It names them as being the enemy and being these bankers. Mm. I think these people that read this Anthony Sutton stuff, they must just read that and then not bother to look into it any further. Because if you look at the 25-point plan of National Socialism, you can see that they're against the banks. And then maybe people will think, well, oh yes, well, were they just saying that? And then you look into it, well, no, they weren't just saying that. Because, you know, they put everybody back to work and then they got rid of usury. And you can find that information online. So how can you get away with saying it?
Well, like I said, it's a lot of it is ignorance, because people take at face value everything what's been said about Germany for the past 70 years. I still find that today when people are leaving comments on YouTube, like, and even you know, the soap stories, people still believe, you know, stories would have been debunked years ago. So it is ignorance, and once they've got this thing in the head about Hitler and it's set in stone, then anything else is easily believed. That's the problem. And let's face it, what the Allies did after the war and how they brainwashed everybody, even the Germans today, you've got to hold your hand up and say they did a great job, without a doubt.
Yeah, of lying to everyone. I mean, if you look at what Hitler said, I mean, he didn't just say these things. I mean, he carried these things out in his actions. And this is the problem I have when people say, oh, well, Hitler wasn't a Christian. Well, not only did he profess his faith, but he lived his faith as well. He put it into action.
That's right.
He put his nation first. You know, I don't understand how people can say that. I mean, if he was to have said that he wasn't a Christian or whatever, he still behaved like one. You know, he behaved in the way that, you know, a Christian should behave.
Well, I've said this before. I said if you look at his actions, he's probably the greatest Christian that ever lived. But even Benjamin Friedman, who was once a Zionist himself, and was part of the Versailles Treaty. It was actually there at the time, who turned after and went around, and it was a wealthy guy and used a lot of his wealth into showing just exactly, you know, the truth of things. He turned against these international bankers. And in the speech that he gave, I mean, I put part of it into the documentary, but there's another part of that same speech where he actually says that it was recognised as a holy war, and that Germany took up the mantle of Christianity to lead a Christian Europe against this communist heathen ideology. I mean, and this is an ex-Zionist speaking, and it comes from certain quarters. Every now and again, I'll pick someone up. I mean, I found an old commentary on YouTube, which kind of documented things after Dresden and after the war, and every odd word is Christian. You know, it's an old documentary, an old American documentary. So I can't, you know, they've done another number. And even people in the National Socialist Movement have been turned against Christianity. So it's an uphill battle all the time, because not only are we arguing with the enemy, but we're arguing with people who we shouldn't be arguing with, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. I think people don't realise Germany was the centre of Christendom. It was the centre of Christianity. Yeah, and the Germans themselves, you know, since Luther, you know, they were really serious about their faith. And one of the things that learned recently about this positive Christianity that they had, I mean, a big part of it was that they were saying, you know, we're putting our faith into action. And Hitler spoke about this and said that it shouldn't just be words, not just hollow words. People have to put their Christian faith into action. Mm-hmm. And a guy that wrote the book, Positive Christianity in the Third Reich, Professor Cassius Fabricius, and he called it the real thing, a chance to practice the real thing, talking about Christianity and positive Christianity.
Which has the highest morals, you know, of any religion. You know, you live by them morals, then life is good.
Well, it was putting those morals into action. It was seeing man as in the image of God, and you want that image to be perfect. You don't want that image seeing people with congenital diseases. That's a mockery of the image of God. Miscegenation or interbreeding between the races, again, that's damaging God's creation. That's a mockery of God's creation.
You've just brought something to my attention, because you'll know over in this country, like, I'll guarantee you now, next Christmas, when you go into a supermarket at Tesco's and you buy a Christmas card, you will be struggling to find a religious-themed Christmas card in this country. This has been going on for a long time, where Christmas, although our friends in the National Socialist Quarter claim that Christmas is an occult activity from way back, the point is Christianity has looked at Christmas for a long, long time, and many photos of it besides a Christmas tree, you know, as a genuine Christian, what's the word I'm looking for? Celebration.
Feast? Yeah. Celebration?
Yeah, celebration. You know, and myself, from being a young child, you know, come Christmas time, like, you know, I was fascinated by the stories of Jesus and Joseph and Mary, on top of all, you know, the glitz on a Christmas tree. So, but if you go in this country, like I said now, and try and find anything religious at any time of the year, not so much Christmas, when you'd think there would be at least something, you know, it's all gone now. And at the end of the day, when I was young, my father was the big influence of that documentary, Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. I can remember him saying, don't be writing Xmas, because that's what the Jews do, right? And you know, it always stuck with me, because they wouldn't write the word Christ. They would put Xmas. And so from that time, I'd always write Christmas, even if there weren't enough room on the card, just as a sign of defiance to it all. And I was watching X Factor at one particular night, and on the panel was, what's she called now? She's married to the rock star from Black Sabbath.
Sharon Osbourne?
That's Sharon Osbourne. And just in passing, there was mentioning this thing about Christmas, and she came out and says, I never write Christmas, I only write Xmas. And it took me back to my dad immediately, years and years and years before, and he was right yet again. You know, she's Jewish and she's into the occult, etc. And she's actually stating there, just in a whim, that I don't write Christmas, around Xmas. And that's the problem in this country. Christianity now is down to its lowest point. It's been demonized by the Freemasons, etc. Like, so people now look at a priest as a pervert. And I can tell you another story as well. I used to at one stage revere a priest myself, but there was an incident with one of my lads at school at a very young age, where he'd owned up to this something what had happened, but the other lad who was also involved wouldn't own up, and so my lad was the one that got the punishment. And when I went round to the school, you know, I was called round and had this this discussion with it all. This priest was adamant that this teacher was right, which I didn't agree with, and stuck by him. And it was only maybe 4 or 5 years later that it came out that this teacher was a paedophile. So the next time I saw that priest, you know, I said, don't even think of coming down my path. You know, that wasn't me at that point, you know what I mean? And then later in time, I found out that, you know, about the Vatican Council too, etc. And I realised, you know, that they had been infiltrated, and I don't go to church now. You know, I still believe in, you know, the teachings of the old Catholic Church, but even I don't go to church now. So, you know, this is a state it's got in Europe, where Christianity is at lowest. And this is what they wanted. This is what the Jews wanted. They wanted to destroy Christianity after World War II. They won that war. 1 point, or maybe two billion Catholics around the world. That's a large amount of people to control, and if they can control them, which this new Pope is doing, then, you know, again, they're doing a good job. I know I'm going off the point slightly, but you just took me back to that point about Christianity and how it's dying in this country, Sven.
Well, it is. I mean, Hitler saw the church as being responsible for the moral teaching of the people. It was the Christian morals that were important, and part of Christian morals are no usury. And this is this is what they saw it as being important for. They weren't attacking it. And the people that were attacking it were the communists and the Jews. I mean, the Jews cannot stand to hear the word Christ. They are so anti-Christian. They were the original Antichrist.
Yeah, well, this is what gets me when people say that, Christianity is a Jewish religion. They hate Christ as much as they hate Hitler. So there's got to be a reason for that, but some of these national socialists just refuse to accept it.
Well, it's a shame because it's like they would rather have this Hollywood caricature of Hitler,
sure,
minus the Holocaust, but everything else that we've been told by Hollywood as being the truth about him. To go back to this Christmas thing, I mean, they'll bring up that, they were trying to turn Christmas back into a pagan celebration. Trying to bring back in historical parts to do with Germany, to do with Christmas. I mean, it used to be called Yule. You know, that doesn't mean they're trying to turn it into a pagan celebration. It just means that they're trying to bring in national and patriotic things to do with it, to do with the past. I mean, the German celebration of Christmas, it's famous. And we have German Christmas markets because they do Christmas so well. To think that Hitler was trying to do away with Christmas, it's on the same level as thinking that the bankers funded Hitler and thinking that the Jews were somehow funding him. I think another part of this Anthony Sutton book is that I think he tries to put across that the Jews needed Hitler to attack lots of Jews in order to get them to move to Israel.
Yeah, this comes into play because it's the get out card for the transfer agreement. Because once that surfaced, they needed an excuse again. Because up to that point, every Jew that left Germany left with just a shirt on his back. And persecuted, but once that came out, and that's only because of the internet again, because although it came out publicly around mid-1980s, not a lot of people knew about it, and certainly wasn't taught in any schools at any point. So the internet again released this surge of truth, which they needed an answer for. So all of a sudden, now Hitler's that friendly with the bankers and he's friendly with the Zionists, and so now he's plotting with the Zionists to make Israel. Yeah, without Hitler, there wouldn't have been an Israel, but that wasn't the reason there was an Israel. That's just how things developed. Develop in a natural way. I mean, if he had his way, like, all the Jews would have been sent to Madagascar. But again, these little twists and these little, you know, quirks which people like Anthony Sutton use are then jumped on by this trolls of the internet. And people without that knowledge of National Socialism fall for it and take it as gospel.
And they set Israel up before Hitler came to power. You had the Balfour Declaration, it was set up, and they were trying to move the Jews over there, and Hitler was helping to move the Jews over there. But I don't think they didn't need to have lots of Jews killed to persuade Jews to move over there.
Well, nobody else wanted the Jews, so,
yeah,
you know, the only peaceful way, because he didn't want a war with anybody, because he'd been in World War One. He didn't need another war. You know, he had too much on his plate, you know, to revise Germany. But the point is, nobody else wanted him. So he's got all these Jews, and then he's got an organisation what comes along and says, we could do with them Jews, because, you know, we've got permission now, even though it weren't Britain to give away, to give away Palestine. We've got Palestine now, we need Jews down there. So Hitler says to him, well, look, you know, you've got a bit of a boycott on here. Like, you know, can we knock the boycott back and I'll fire all these Jews out. Solves all my problems peaceably, which is what was happening up to the war.
Yeah, I think it was peaceable up until then. You know, there wasn't a problem.
No blood spilled, not in Czechoslovakia or anywhere else up to that point.
Well, one of the other things that gets said is that the Jews manufactured this war, obviously with Hitler working with them, so that they could make lots of money from the arms sales. Because they say, you know, well, the bankers profit from these wars because they profit from their arms sales, which does happen in war. And arms manufacturers do make the money from these wars. But again, if you go back and look at the 25-point plan, anyone profiting from a war, these war profiteers would be hanged.
Yeah.
You know, capital punishment and all their profits taken from them. So, you know, so they weren't war profiteers on the German side. I mean, these bankers weren't profiteering from the weapons manufacturer on the German side, because the weapons manufacturer was being paid for by this non-usurious banking system with these Reichsmarks just being a measurement of value and not being linked to this gold standard, but being linked to the amount of work that the German people could produce, you know, their productive value.
I actually made a video of of the 25 points of National Socialism, which is up on YouTube. I think it's on the website of the Justice for Germans as well, where the video explains it goes through it all with explanations. So yeah, you're quite right, and that's the 25 points is a great pointer to how the National Socialists thought and worked, but he's often ignored. In fact, totally ignored in some quarters. But again, it points out that religion can be taught in Germany or worshipped, as long as it's not in your face type of thing, you know, the rulings was, which means, you know, when you get these Muslims on the streets shouting the Shia thing, that type of thing, that wouldn't have been allowed. But your own, you know, private, personal religion was fine. In fact, it was probably one of the most open countries in the world at that time for different religions. You know, no persecutions.
So long as it wasn't contradicting the state, as long as it wasn't in the nation's, you know, harmful to the nation and preaching anything that's harmful to the nation, which is what we have now. You know, we have these Judeo-Christian churches preaching, you know, what is definitely harmful to the nation, preaching immigration, preaching acceptance of homosexuals, accepting this gay marriage, you know, all this sort of stuff is harmful for the nation. And it's these churches that are these apostate churches, you know, they're churches that are going against what's taught in the Bible. They're going the complete opposite of it. And that doesn't mean that Christianity is the enemy. It means that Christianity, just like everything else in our countries, has been taken over and subverted by these creatures.
It doesn't mean
we throw it away. You know, it's just because you have a few bad kings, you don't get rid of the monarchy. You know, that was what I forgotten his name, the Romanian chap. How can I forget his name? That, you know, that was what he said.
Yeah. Well,
Codriano. At the end of the day, Codriano. That was a quote from him. Yeah, so you don't, go on.
Well, Christianity lost World War II, which we both agree on. And these are the consequences of losing that war. Even though it's now 70 years down the road, as we said in a previous podcast, these people don't have to rush things through. They don't have to make things obvious what they're doing. They do it nice and slow, and then one day you just wake up and life's changed. I mean, look at the outside the White House now. Instead of using at Christmas time, the Christmas scene of the cribs and Mary, Joseph, etc., you know, in the stable, now there's a giant menorah outside. The Christian thing's been banned, and that tells a whole story.
Well, it's like the big stamp of who's in charge, isn't it? It's them asserting their authority, getting Christianity banned and then sticking a menorah there in its place. Getting Vatican II to say that they were the elder brothers in the faith when, you know, they were the ones that killed Jesus. So, you know, they're proud of it in their Talmud. They admit it in the Bible. The last 2,000 years, you know, they've never questioned that.
Mel Gibson for actually making a film about it. So he's had no work for the last 10 years.
Well, I think, like you say, it's a holy war. It's this war of the forces of light against the forces of dark, and you can put things on either side of that. You can say, you know, that Christianity is white. It's a white race. Maybe corrupted now. It may be spreading it to these other races, but that's only happened in the last century or two. Yeah. It was seen as Christians against the Muslims in these crusades, and when the Muslims invaded Spain, you know, it was getting rid of them. The identity of white people was with Christianity. So even if you're a Christian or not, you know, if you're proud of being white, then you know you should be defending Christianity, the real Christianity, not the multicultural one world, you know, Judeo Christianity that they preach today. You know, they're going to have to completely rewrite the Bible to make it condone what they're doing today.
Well, it's been totally infiltrated. I mean, even Pope John, the Polish Pope, I believe his parents were Jewish. His mother was Jewish, which made him Jewish by the laws of the Talmud. You know, then, you know, he was a Freemason, and today we have a Freemason as a Pope. Everything goes against the order of what original Christianity was all about. But they've been, like I said, they lost World War II. Hitler was the defender of Christianity and the Vatican at the time. The war was lost, and so everything what is happening is quite natural and understanding when you realise who won the war. The communists, they hate Christianity, and the Freemasons are the same. So it's not a surprise when I look around, especially in Britain, that, you know, the religion is nothing today. It's not even taught in the schools these days. And even in America, you know, they're stopping them from mentioning the word God and things like that. But that shouldn't surprise people. But people don't realise that communism did win World War II. And because things move so slowly and so... It's a bit like I watched the thing on the Aberfan disaster where, the mudslide came and, you know, all of a sudden, like, you woke up and, you know, the school is covered in a mud heap. It's a bit like that. The mud moves slowly but steadily, and then suddenly you wake up one day and the world's changed. We're under a communist system, which we practically are now anyway.
Well, it's like we're being collectively punished for our collective sins, basically, you know, by going against Germany and attacking them. I mean, it's a collective sin of the other white nations to fight against Germany in the way that we did. And we are now all paying for it. Now, Germany is paying for it for us attacking them, and we are paying for it. You know, so, I mean, they hadn't done anything wrong, but they're paying for it. I mean, it is
Christians down in the Middle East are paying for it. You know, this is probably the worst time for Christians ever, or at least since, you know, the Roman days when Roman Empire was pagan. You know, I mean, you know, ISIS are chopping off people's heads because they're Christian. It's probably the worst time around the world to be, but that shouldn't be a surprise because we all know who fund ISIS, and, you know, and they're just doing what they do, what the masters want them to do. It shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah, I look back through history, and I see, we had the Cymry in Britain. They were invaded by the Anglo-Saxons, did terrible things to them. The Anglo-Saxons were invaded by the Normans, well, by the Vikings, mm-hmm. who did terrible things to them. And then they settled down. You had Viking, Anglo-Saxon, and Cymry. Then they were invaded by the Normans, did terrible things to them. Then the group of nations have invaded Germany and done terrible things to them. There's like this payback and this balancing. I mean, at least you can say that Germany is doing well economically. I mean, people do see Germany is doing well.
But I think there's a reason for that. You know, I honestly think that the Rothschilds control Germany as they do Europe. And I think for whatever reason, they're making Germany the strong financial country of the European Union. But I think that could turn in a day if they wanted it to. I honestly believe that, because Goldman Sachs and the others just, run Germany. But for whatever reason, and I've yet to find out, I think that they're artificially making that the strong country. I was praying that Greece would pull out, but I don't think they're going to do now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, it is a puppet administration in Germany. It is a puppet administration.
For sure.
But Germany is economically doing well and is seen as leading the EU. But as you know, it's not them actually leading it. It is this puppet administration.
Well, I think I honestly believe it's led from the City of London. I mean, there's a reason that we don't use the euro, and there's a reason why, Britain hasn't fully committed to everything, because I think we run it secretly.
Well, it all goes back to the City of London and these Jews that are in there in the City of London. I mean, they've got laws for the banks that nobody in the Bank of England can ever be held to account for anything. They're above the law. There's I forget the name of the book, but it actually tells you these laws of England. And when they were setting up these banks, they put into it that nobody that works for the bank can actually be held to account by the law. Well, and of course, you've never seen any bankers put in prison for done.
That's the same with the politicians, because I can remember in one of the cases for a paedophile case that Ken Clark was mentioned. And there was some evidence against him, some film footage. And when the time to arrest him came, they said he was above arrest and never did get arrested for it. So there's certain people in this country, certain quarters that are above the law. And that's the reason why most of these paedophiles are found out after they've died.
Yeah, and you can contrast these laws and these bankers that haven't gone to prison. You contrast that with the National Socialist 25-point plan, where the war profiteers, were capital punishment, and have everything taken from them. So to then say that Hitler was funded by these bankers, is just a nonsense. It really is.
What is a nonsense I've always found is that the argument is that seeing many comments again on YouTube that Hitler did this to Germany. You know when you see the destruction of Germany, and this is all Hitler's fault and all that. When it wasn't Hitler what bombed Berlin or bombed Dresden, it was Churchill. But they twist it in such a way that people actually believe that it was Hitler's fault.
The Germans do today, don't they? They think that they themselves were responsible for this. If only they would look into it, they would see that that they were actually the guiding light. Yeah. They were the guiding light for the rest of the world, and the darkness, tried to snuff it out. But it's that flame's still burning there. We still take the inspiration from it today.
I think that's why they hate him so much, and that's why they demonize him so much.
Yeah, well, I think we've sufficiently covered all the arguments against what this Anthony Sutton puts forward, and hopefully people will be able to use some of these arguments that we've come up with in this podcast to counter the people that are promoting, this conspiracy idea.
I've got some videos up on YouTube on my Dennis Wise channel, which debunks certain things under 3 minutes, because I know people haven't always got a lot of time. So I have put a few videos up of certain things, which doesn't take long to watch, but is obviously fact. So people can go there as well for information anytime, because I know a lot of people do use them videos because they're so quick, to view and get the point over.
Have you got some of these points in those have you about the
Great. Well, certainly about the Rothschilds and about the occult and a couple of others which I can't quite remember because I don't always watch my own videos. Once I've made them, they're up there, for other people to watch. But yeah, certainly there'll be some videos there if people need for any arguments, especially Christianity. I've done a couple on Christianity. You can't argue the fact that when they're taking mass, on the battlefield, you can't argue. It's Christian.
Oh yeah, I think it's obviously a Christian. It's just people that believe the Hollywood propaganda, the anti-national socialist propaganda that think otherwise for whatever reasons. I think they're mainly they've just got personal reasons against it rather than logical reasons for not believing it, because logically, it's quite clear that it was Christian, and what they were doing was Christian. It's a personal reasons I think that people have for rejecting it, and it's probably personal reasons why people end up believing this Anthony Sutton stuff as well, because if they looked into it, and like we've been discussing in this podcast, they would see that there was no way that he was a double agent funded by the bankers. Just ludicrous.
Yeah. Well, there's also a video up somewhere. Wasn't my video, but somebody else who mentioned yet another lie about Hitler, and then I listed about 30 and said you forgot all these, which gets quite a number of likes.
most lied about man of all time. So yeah, he's got to be good. He's got to be good. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this all week's podcast. And just remind people to go and check out Dennis's videos, Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, and Communism by the Back Door. And they can find them just by typing that into Google, I would have thought, Dennis.
Yeah. And like I said, if they visit my YouTube channel, I'm sure they'll find some other videos up there which will help in some arguments with people on the net.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us once again, and thank you, listeners, for listening, and we do hope to see you again next time. Yeah.